Miss Marple shook her head. "Gentlemen have to work so hard nowadays," she said. "There really doesn't seem any leisure, no matter how much money there is."
"Yes, it makes it very lonely and dull for a wife sometimes. I often wish I had never come here," said Jennifer. "Oh, well, I dare say it serves me right. I ought never to have done it."
"Ought never to have done what, my dear?"
"I ought never to have married Val. Oh, well,"
she sighed abruptly,
"don't let's talk of it any more."
Obligingly, Miss Marple began to talk about the new skirts that were being worn in Paris. "So kind of you not to interrupt just now," said Miss Marple, when, having tapped at the door of the study, Inspector Neil had told her to come in. "There were just one or two little points, you know, that I wanted to verify." She added reproachfully, "We didn't really finish our talk just now."
"I'm so sorry, Miss Marple." Inspector Neil summoned up a charming smile. "I'm afraid I was rather rude. I summoned you to a consultation and did all the talking myself."
"Oh, that's quite all right," said Miss Marple immediately. "Because, you see, I wasn't really quite ready then to put all my cards on the table. I mean, I wouldn't like to make any accusation unless I was absolutely sure about it. Sure, that is, in my own mind. And I am sure now."
"You're sure about what, Miss Marple?"
"Well, certainly about who killed Mr. Fortescue. What you told me about the marmalade, I mean, just clinches the matter. Showing how, I mean, as well as who, and well within the mental capacity."
Inspector Neil blinked a little.
"I'm so sorry," said Miss Marple, perceiving this reaction on his part. "I'm afraid I find it difficult sometimes to make myself perfectly clear."
"I'm not quite sure yet, Miss Marple, what we're talking about."
"Well, perhaps," said Miss Marple, "we'd better begin all over again. I mean, if you could spare the time. I would rather like to put my own point of view before you. You see, I've talked a good deal to people, to old Miss Ramsbottom, and to Mrs. Crump, and to her husband. He, of course, is a liar, but that doesn't really matter, because if you know liars are liars, it comes to the same thing. But I did want to get the telephone calls clear, and the nylon stockings, and all that."
Inspector Neil blinked again, and wondered what he had let himself in for, and why he had ever thought that Miss Marple might be a desirable and clear-headed colleague. Still, he thought to himself, however muddle-headed she was, she might have picked up some useful bits of information. All Inspector Neil's successes in his profession had come from listening well. He was prepared to listen now.
"Please tell me all about it, Miss Marple," he said. "But start at the beginning, won't you?"
"Yes, of course," said Miss Marple. "And the beginning is Gladys. I mean, I came here because of Gladys, and you very kindly let me look through all her things. And what with that, and the nylon stocking, and the telephone calls, and one thing and another, it did come out perfectly clear. I mean, about Mr. Fortescue and the tax scene."
"You have a theory?" asked Inspector Neil, "as to who put the taxine into Mr. Fortescue's marmalade?"
"It isn't a theory," said Miss Marple. "I know."
For the third time, Inspector Neil blinked.
"It was Gladys, of course," said Miss Marple.
Chapter 26. Inspector Neil stared at Miss Marple and slowly shook his head.
"Are you saying," he said incredulously, "that Gladys Martin deliberately murdered Rex Fortescue?" "I'm sorry, Miss Marple, but I simply don't believe it."
"No, of course she didn't mean to murder him," said Miss Marple, "but she did it all the same. You said yourself that she was nervous and upset when you questioned her, and that she looked guilty."
"Yes, but not guilty of murder."
"Oh, no, I agree. As I say, she didn't mean to murder anybody, but she put the taxine in the marmalade. She didn't think it was poison, of course."
"What did she think it was?
Inspector Neil's voice still sounded incredulous.
"I rather imagine she thought it was a truth drug," said Miss Marple. "It's very interesting, you know, and very instructive, the things these girls cut out of papers and keep. It's always been the same, you know, all through the ages, recipes for beauty, for attracting the man you love, and witchcraft and charms and marvellous happenings. Nowadays they're mostly lumped together under the heading of science. Nobody believes in magicians anymore. Nobody believes that anyone can come along and wave a wand and turn you into a frog. But if you read in the paper that by injecting certain glands, scientists can alter your vital tissues and you'll develop frog-like characteristics, well, everybody would believe that. And having read in the papers about truth drugs, of course Gladys would believe it absolutely when he told her that that's what it was."
"When who told her?" asked Inspector Neil.
"Albert Evans," said Miss Marple. "Not, of course, that that is really his name. But anyway, he met her last summer at a holiday camp, and he flattered her up and made love to her, and I should imagine told her some story of injustice or persecution or something like that. Anyway, the point was that Rex Fortescue had to be made to confess what he had done and make restitution. I don't know this, of course, Inspector Neil, but I'm pretty sure about it. He got her to take a post here, and it's really very easy nowadays, with the shortage of domestic staff, to obtain a post where you want one. Staffs are changing the whole time. Then they arranged a date together. You remember on that last postcard he said, 'Oh, remember our date?' That was to be the great day they were working for. Gladys would put the drug that he gave her into the top of the marmalade so that Mr. Fortescue would eat it at breakfast. And she would also put the rye in his pocket. I don't know what story he told her to account for the rye, but as I told you from the beginning, Inspector Neil, Gladys Martin was a very credulous girl. In fact, there's hardly anything she wouldn't believe if a personable young man put it to her the right way."
"Go on," said Inspector Neil in a dazed voice.
"The idea probably was," continued Miss Marple, "that Albert was going to call upon him at the office that day, and that by that time the truth drug would have worked, and that Mr. Fortescue would have confessed everything, and so on and so on. You can imagine the poor girl's feelings when she hears that Mr. Fortescue is dead."
"But surely," Inspector Neil objected, "she would have told," Miss Marple asked sharply.
"What was the first thing she said to you when you questioned her?"
"She said, 'I didn't do it,'" Inspector Neil said.
"Exactly," said Miss Marple triumphantly. "Don't you see that's exactly what she would say? If she broke an ornament, you know, Gladys would always say, 'I didn't do it, Miss Marple. I can't think how it happened.' They can't help it, poor dears. They're very upset at what they've done, and their great idea is to avoid blame. You don't think that a nervous young woman who had murdered someone when she didn't mean to murder him is going to admit it, do you? That would have been quite out of character."
"Yes," Neil said. "I suppose it would." He ran his mind back over his interview with Gladys. Nervous, upset, guilty, shifty-eyed, all those things. They might have had small significance or a big one. He could not really blame himself for having failed to come to the right conclusion.
"Her first idea, as I say," went on Miss Marple, "would be to deny it all. Then, in a confused way, she would try to sort it all out in her mind. Perhaps Albert hadn't known how strong the stuff was, or he'd made a mistake and given her too much of it. She'd think of excuses for him and explanations. She'd hope he'd get in touch with her, which of course he did, by telephone."
"Do you know that?" asked Neil sharply.
Miss Marple shook her head.
"No, I admit I'm assuming it. But there were calls that day. That is to say, people rang up, and when Crump or Mrs. Crump answered, the phone was hung up.
That's what he'd do, you know. Ring up and wait until Gladys answered the phone, and then he'd make an appointment with her to meet him.
I see, said Neil.
You mean she had an appointment to meet him on the day she died?
Miss Marple nodded vigorously.
Yes, that was indicated. Mrs. Crump was right about one thing. The girl had on her best nylon stockings and her good shoes. She was going to meet someone. Only she wasn't going out to meet him. He was coming to Yew Tree Lodge. That's why she was on the lookout that day and flustered and late with tea. Then, as she brought the second tray into the hall, I think she looked along the passage to the side door and saw him there beckoning to her. She put the tray down and went out to meet him.
And then he strangled her, said Neil.
Miss Marple pursed her lips together. It would only take a minute, she said, but he couldn't risk her talking. She had to die, poor, silly, credulous girl. And then he put a clothes peg on her nose. Stern anger vibrated the old lady's voice, to make it fit in with the rhyme. The rye, the blackbirds, the counting house, the bread and honey, and the clothes peg. The nearest he could get to a little dicky bird that nipped off her nose.
And I suppose at the end of it all he'll go to Broadmoor, and we shan't be able to hang him because he's crazy, said Neil slowly.
I think you'll hang him all right, said Miss Marple. And he's not crazy, Inspector, not for a moment.
Inspector Neil looked hard at her. Now, see here, Miss Marple, you've outlined a theory to me.
Yes, yes, although you say you know it's only a theory. You're saying that a man is responsible for these crimes, who called himself Albert Evans, who picked up the girl Gladys at a holiday camp and used her for his own purposes. This Albert Evans was someone who wanted revenge for the old Blackbird Mine business. You're suggesting, aren't you, that Mrs. Mackenzie's son, Don Mackenzie, didn't die at Dunkirk, that he's still alive, that he's behind all this? But to Inspector Neil's surprise, Miss Marple was shaking her head violently. "Oh, no," she said. "Oh, no, I'm not suggesting that at all. Don't you see, Inspector Neil, all this Blackbird business is really a complete fake. It was used, that was all, used by somebody who heard about the Blackbirds, the ones in the library and in the pie." The Blackbirds were genuine enough. They were put there by someone who knew about the old business, who wanted revenge for it. But only the revenge of trying to frighten Mr. Fortescue or to make him uncomfortable. I don't believe you know, Inspector Neil, that children can really be brought up and taught to wait and brood and carry out revenge. Children, after all, have got a lot of sense. But anyone whose father had been swindled and perhaps left to die might be willing to play a malicious trick on the person who was supposed to have done it. That's what happened, I think. And the killer used it.
The killer, said Inspector Neil. Come now, Miss Marple, let's have your ideas about the killer. Who was he?
You won't be surprised, said Miss Marple. Not really. Because you'll see as soon as I tell you who he is, or rather who I think he is, for one must be accurate, must one not? You'll see that he's just the type of person who would commit these murders. He's sane, brilliant, and quite unscrupulous, and he did it, of course, for money. Probably for a good deal of money.
Percival Fortescue?
Inspector Neil spoke almost imploringly, but he knew as he spoke that he was wrong. The picture of the man that Miss Marple had built up for him had no resemblance to Percival Fortescue.
"Oh, no," said Miss Marple. "Not Percival. Lance."
Chapter 27
"It's impossible," said Inspector Neil. He leaned back in his chair and watched Miss Marple with fascinated eyes. As Miss Marple had said, he was not surprised. His words were a denial not of probability, but of possibility.
Lance Fortescue fitted the description. Miss Marple had outlined it well enough, but Inspector Neil simply could not see how Lance could be the answer. Miss Marple leaned forward in her chair and gently, persuasively, and rather in the manner of someone explaining the simple facts of arithmetic to a small child, outlined her theory.
He's always been like that, you see. I mean, he's always been bad. Bad all through, although with it he's always been attractive, especially attractive to women. He's got a brilliant mind and he'll take risks. He's always taken risks, and because of his charm, people have always believed the best and not the worst about him. He came home in the summer to see his father. I don't believe for a moment that his father wrote to him or sent for him, unless, of course, you've got actual evidence to that effect. She paused inquiringly.
Neil shook his head. No, he said. I've no evidence of his father sending for him. I've got a letter that Lance is supposed to have written to him, but Lance could quite easily have slipped that among his father's papers in the study here the day he arrived.
Sharp of him, said Miss Marple, nodding her head. Well, as I say, he probably flew over here and attempted a reconciliation with his father, but Mr. Fortescue wouldn't have it. You see, Lance had recently got married, and the small pittance he was living on, and which he had doubtless been supplementing in various dishonest ways, was not enough for him any more. He was very much in love with Pat, who is a dear, sweet girl, and he wanted a respectable, settled life with her, nothing shifty. And that, from his point of view, meant having a lot of money. When he was at Yew Tree Lodge, he must have heard about these blackbirds. Perhaps his father mentioned them. Perhaps Adele did. He jumped to the conclusion that Mackenzie's daughter was established in the house, and it occurred to him that she would make a very good scapegoat for murder. Because, you see, when he realized that he couldn't get his father to do what he wanted, he must have cold-bloodedly decided that murder it would have to be. He may have realized that his father wasn't, very well, and have feared that by the time his father died, there would have been a complete crash.
He knew about his father's health, all right, said the inspector.
Ah, that explains a good deal. Perhaps the coincidence of his father's Christian name being Rex, together with the blackbird incident, suggested the idea of the nursery rhyme. Make a crazy business of the whole thing, and tie it up with that old revenge threat of the Mackenzies. Then, you see, he could dispose of Adele, too, and that £100,000 going out of the firm. But there would have to be a third character, the maid in the garden hanging up the clothes. And I suppose that suggested the whole wicked plan to him. An innocent accomplice whom he could silence before she could talk, and that would give him what he wanted, a genuine alibi for the first murder. The rest was easy. He arrived here from the station just before 5 o'clock, which was the time when Gladys brought the second tray into the hall. He came to the side door, saw her, and beckoned to her. Strangling her and carrying her body round the house to where the clotheslines were would have only taken 3 or 4 minutes. Then he rang the front doorbell, was admitted to the house, and joined the family for tea. After tea, he went up to see Miss Ramsbottom. When he came down, he slipped into the library, found Adele alone there drinking a last cup of tea, and sat down by her on the sofa, and while he was talking to her, he managed to slip the cyanide into her tea. It wouldn't be difficult, you know, a little piece of white stuff, like sugar. He might have stretched out his hand to the sugar basin and taken a lump and apparently dropped it into her cup. He'd laugh and say, "Look, I've dropped more sugar into your tea." She'd say she didn't mind, stir it, and drink it. It would be as easy and audacious as that. Yes, he's an audacious fellow.
Inspector Neil said slowly, "It's actually possible, yes. But I cannot see. Really, Miss Marple, I cannot see what he stood to gain by it. Granted that unless old Fortescue died, the business would soon be on the rocks, is Lance's share big enough to cause him to plan 3 murders? I don't think so. I really don't think so.
That is a little difficult, admitted Miss Marple. Yes, I agree with you. That does present difficulties. I suppose...
She hesitated, looking at the inspector.
I suppose I am so very ignorant in financial matters, but I suppose it is really true that the Blackbird Mine is worthless?
Neil reflected. Various scraps fitted together in his mind. Lance's willingness to take the various speculative or worthless shares off Percival's hands. His parting words today in London that Percival had better get rid of the Blackbird and its hoodoo. A gold mine. A worthless gold mine. But perhaps the mine had not been worthless. And yet, somehow that seemed unlikely. Old Rex Fortescue was hardly likely to have made a mistake on that point. Although, of course, there might have been soundings recently. Where was the mine? West Africa, Lance had said. Yes, but somebody else, was it Miss Ramsbottom, had said it was in East Africa. Had Lance been deliberately misleading when he said West instead of East? Miss Ramsbottom was old and forgetful, and yet she might have been right and not Lance. East Africa. Lance had just come from East Africa. Had he perhaps some recent knowledge? Suddenly, with a click, another piece fitted into the inspector's puzzle. Sitting in the train, reading the Times. Uranium deposits found in Tanganyika. Supposing that the uranium deposits were on the site of the old Blackbird. That would explain everything. Lance had come to have knowledge of that, being on the spot, and with uranium deposits there was a fortune to be grasped. An enormous fortune. He sighed. He looked at Miss Marple.
"How do you think," he asked reproachfully, "that I'm ever going to be able to prove all this?"
Miss Marple nodded at him encouragingly, as an aunt might have encouraged a bright nephew who was going in for a scholarship exam. "You'll prove it," she said. "You're a very, very clever man, Inspector Neil. I've seen that from the first. Now you know who it is, you ought to be able to get the evidence. At that holiday camp, for instance, they'll recognise his photograph. He'll find it hard to explain why he stayed there for a week calling himself Albert Evans. Yes, Inspector Neil thought. Lance Fortescue was brilliant and unscrupulous, but he was foolhardy too. The risks he took were just a little too great. Neil thought to himself, I'll get him. Then, doubt sweeping over him, he looked at Miss Marple. It's all pure assumption, you know, he said.
Yes, but you are sure, aren't you?
I suppose so. After all, I've known his kind before.
The old lady nodded.
Yes, that matters so much. That's really why I'm sure.
Neil looked at her playfully.
Because of your knowledge of criminals?
Oh, no, of course not. Because of Pat.
A dear girl. And the kind that always married a bad lot. That's really what drew my attention to him at the start.
I may be sure, in my own mind, said the inspector, but there's a lot that needs explaining. The Ruby Mackenzie business, for instance. I could swear that...
Miss Marple interrupted.
And you're quite right, but you've been thinking of the wrong person. Go and talk to Mrs. Percy.
Mrs. Fortescue, said Inspector Neil, do you mind telling me your name before you were married?
Oh!
Jennifer gasped. She looked frightened.
You needn't be nervous, madam, said Inspector Neil, but it's much better to come out with the truth. I'm right, I think, in saying that your name before you were married was Ruby Mackenzie.
Why shouldn't it be? Said Mrs. Percival Fortescue.
No reason at all, said Inspector Neil gently, and added, I was talking to your mother a few days ago at Pinewood Sanatorium.
She's very angry with me, said Jennifer. I never go and see her now because it only upsets her. Poor Mumsy. She was so devoted to Dad, you know.
And she brought you up to have very melodramatic ideas of revenge?
Yes, said Jennifer. She kept making us swear on the Bible that we'd never forget and that we'd kill him one day. Of course, once I'd gone into hospital and started my training, I began to realise that her mental balance wasn't what it should be.
You yourself must have felt revengeful, though, Mrs. Fortescue.
Well, of course I did. Rex Fortescue practically murdered my father. I don't mean he actually shot him or knifed him or anything like that, but I'm quite certain that he did leave Father to die. That's the same thing, isn't it?
It's the same thing morally, yes.
So I did want to pay him back, said Jennifer. When a friend of mine came to nurse his son, I got her to leave and to propose my replacing her. I don't know exactly what I meant to do. I didn't, really I didn't, Inspector. I never meant to kill Mr. Fortescue. I had some idea, I think, of nursing his son so badly that the son would die. But, of course, if you are a nurse by profession, you can't do that sort of thing. Actually, I had quite a job pulling Val through, and then he got fond of me and asked me to marry him, and I thought, well, really, that's a far more sensible revenge than anything else. I mean, to marry Mr. Fortescue's eldest son and get the money he swindled Father out of back that way. I think it was a far more sensible way.
Yes, indeed, said Inspector Neil. Far more sensible. He added, it was you, I suppose, who put the blackbirds on the desk and in the pie. Mrs. Percival flushed.
Yes. I suppose it was silly of me, really. But Mr. Fortescue had been talking about suckers one day, and boasting of how he'd swindled people, got the best of them. Oh, in quite a legal way. And I thought I'd just like to give him, well, a kind of fright. And it did give him a fright. He was awfully upset.
She added anxiously,
But I didn't do anything else. I didn't really, Inspector. You don't honestly think I would murder anyone, do you?
Inspector Neil smiled. No, he said, I don't. He added, By the way, have you given Miss Dove any money lately? Jennifer's jaw dropped.
How did you know?
We know a lot of things, said Inspector Neil, and added to himself, And guess a good many, too. Jennifer continued, speaking rapidly.
She came to me and said that you'd accused her of being Ruby Mackenzie. She said if I'd get hold of £500, she'd let you go on thinking so. She said if you knew that I was Ruby Mackenzie, I'd be suspected of murdering Mr. Fortescue and my stepmother. I had an awful job getting the money, because, of course, I couldn't tell Percival. He doesn't know about me. I had to sell my diamond engagement ring and a very beautiful necklace Mr. Fortescue gave me.
Don't worry, Mrs. Percival, said Inspector Neil. I think we can get your money back for you. It was on the following day that Inspector Neil had another interview with Miss Mary Dove. I wonder, Miss Dove, he said, if you'd give me a cheque for £500 payable to Mrs. Percival Fortescue. He had the pleasure of seeing Mary Dove lose countenance for once.
The silly fool told you, I suppose, she said.
Yes. Blackmail, Miss Dove, is rather a serious charge.
It wasn't exactly blackmail, Inspector. I think you'll find it hard to make out a case of blackmail against me. I was just doing Mrs. Percival a special service to oblige her.
Well, if you'll give me that cheque, Miss Dove, we'll leave it like that. Mary Dove got her cheque-book and took out her fountain pen.
It's very annoying, she said with a sigh. I'm particularly hard up at the moment.
You'll be looking for another job soon, I suppose.
Yes, this one hasn't turned out quite according to plan.
It's all been very unfortunate from my point of view.
Inspector Neil agreed.
Yes, it put you in rather a difficult position, didn't it? I mean, it was quite likely that at any moment we might have to look into your antecedents.
Mary Dove, cool once more, allowed her eyebrows to rise.
Really, Inspector? My past is quite blameless, I assure you.
Yes, it is, Inspector Neil agreed cheerfully. We've nothing against you at all, Miss Dove.
It's a curious coincidence, though, that in the last three places which you have filled so admirably, there have happened to be robberies about 3 months after you left. The thieves have seemed remarkably well informed as to where mink coats, jewels, etc. were kept. Curious coincidence, isn't it?
Coincidences do happen, Inspector.
Oh, yes, said Neil. They happen. But they mustn't happen too often, Miss Dove.
I dare say, he added, that we may meet again in the future.
I hope, said Mary Dove. I don't mean to be rude, Inspector Neil, but I hope we don't.
Chapter 28. Miss Marple smoothed over the top of her suitcase, tucked in an end of woolly shawl, and shut the lid down. She looked round her bedroom. No, she had left nothing behind. Crump came in to fetch down her luggage. Miss Marple went into the next room to say good-bye to Miss Ramsbottom.
I'm afraid, said Miss Marple, that I've made a very poor return for your hospitality. I hope you will be able to forgive me some day.
Ha! Said Miss Ramsbottom. She was, as usual, playing patience. Black knave, red queen, she observed.
Then she darted a shrewd sideways glance at Miss Marple.
You found out what you wanted to, I suppose, she said.
Yes.
And I suppose you've told that police inspector all about it. Will he be able to prove a case?
I'm almost sure he will, said Miss Marple. It may take a little time.
I am not asking you any questions, said Miss Ramsbottom. You're a shrewd woman. I knew that as soon as I saw you. I don't blame you for what you've done. Wickedness is wickedness and has got to be punished. There's a bad streak in this family. It didn't come from our side, I'm thankful to say. Elvira, my sister, was a fool, nothing worse. Black knave, repeated Miss Ramsbottom, fingering the card. Handsome, but a black heart. Yes, I was afraid of it. Ah, well, you can't always help loving a sinner. The boy always had a way with him, even got round me. Told a lie about the time he left me that day. I didn't contradict him, but I wondered. I wondered ever since. But he was Elvira's boy. I couldn't bring myself to say anything. Ah, well, you're a righteous woman, Jane Marple, and right must prevail. I'm sorry for his wife, though.
So am I, said Miss Marple.
In the hall, Pat Fortescue was waiting to say goodbye.
I wish you weren't going, she said. I shall miss you.
It's time for me to go, said Miss Marple. I've finished what I came here to do. It hasn't been altogether pleasant, but it's important, you know, that wickedness shouldn't triumph.
Pat looked puzzled.
I don't understand. No, my dear, but perhaps you will some day. If I might venture to advise, if anything ever goes wrong in your life, I think the happiest thing for you would be to go back to where you were happy as a child. Go back to Ireland, my dear. Horses and dogs, all that.
Pat nodded.
Sometimes I wish I'd done just that when Freddy died. But if I had,
her voice changed and softened,
I'd never have met Lance.
Miss Marple sighed.
We're not staying here, you know, said Pat. We're going back to East Africa as soon as everything's cleared up. I'm so glad. God bless you, dear child, said Miss Marple.
One needs a great deal of courage to get through life. I think you have it."
She patted the girl's hand and, releasing it, went through the front door to the waiting taxi. Miss Marple reached home late that evening. Kitty, the latest graduate from St. Faith's home, let her in and greeted her with a beaming face.
"I've got a herring for your supper, miss. I'm so glad to see you home. You'll find everything very nice in the house. Regular spring cleaning I've had."
"That's very nice, Kitty. I'm glad to be home."
6 spiderwebs on the cornice, Miss Marple noted. These girls never raised their heads. She was nonetheless too kind to say so.
"Your letters is on the hall table, miss, and there's one as went to Daisy Mead by mistake. Always doing that, aren't they? Does look a bit alike, Dane and Daisy, and the writing's so bad I don't wonder this time. They've been away there, and the house shut up. They only got back and sent it round today. Said as how they hoped it wasn't important."
Miss Marple picked up her correspondence. The letter to which Kitty had referred was on top of the others. A faint chord of remembrance stirred in Miss Marple's mind at the sight of the blotted, scrawled handwriting. She tore it open.
"Dear Madam, I hope as you'll forgive me writing this, but I really don't know what to do. Indeed I don't, and I never meant no harm. Dear Madam, you'll have seen the newspapers. It was murder, they say, but it wasn't me that did it. Not really, because I would never do anything wicked like that, and I know as how he wouldn't either. Albert, I mean. I'm telling this badly, but you see, we met last summer and was going to be married, only Bert hadn't got his rights. He'd been done out of them, swindled by this Mr. Fortescue who's dead. And Mr. Fortescue, he just denied everything. And of course everybody believed him and not Bert, because he was rich and Bert was poor. But Bert had a friend who works in a place where they make these new drugs. And there's what they call a truth drug. You've read about it perhaps in the paper, and it makes people speak the truth whether they want to or not. Bert was going to see Mr. Fortescue in his office on October the 31st and taking a lawyer with him, and I was to be sure to give him the drug at breakfast that morning, and then it would work just right for when they came, and he'd admit as all what Bert said was quite true. Well, Madam, I put it in the marmalade, but now he's dead, and I think as though it must have been too strong. But it wasn't Bert's fault, because Bert would never do a thing like that. But I can't tell the police, because maybe they think Bert did it on purpose, which I know he didn't. Oh, Madam, I don't know what to do or what to say. And the police are here in the house, and it's awful. And they ask you questions and look at you so stern. And I don't know what to do, and I haven't heard from Bert. Oh, Madam, I don't like to ask it of you, but if you could only come here and help me, they'd listen to you. And you were always so kind to me, and I didn't mean anything wrong, and Bert didn't either. If you could only help us. Yours respectfully, Gladys Martin. P.S. I'm enclosing a snap of Bert and me. One of the boys took it at the camp and gave it me. Bert doesn't know I've got it. He hates being snapped. But you can see, Madam, what a nice boy he is.
Miss Marple, her lips pursed together, stared down at the photograph. The pair pictured there were looking at each other. Miss Marple's eyes went from Gladys's pathetic, adoring face, the mouth slightly open, to the other face, the dark, handsome, smiling face of Lance Fortescue. The last words of the pathetic letter echoed in her mind. You can see what a nice boy he is. The tears rose in Miss Marple's eyes. Succeeding pity, there came anger. Anger against a heartless killer. And then, displacing both these emotions, there came a surge of triumph. The triumph some specialist might feel who has successfully reconstructed an extinct animal from a fragment of jawbone and a couple of teeth.
This has been a presentation of BBC Audiobooks America. Pocket Full of Rye, a Miss Marple mystery. Text copyright 1953 by Agatha Christie Malawan, Acorion Company. All rights reserved. Production copyright 2006 by the Audio Partners. All rights reserved.